Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media webcast titled Leveraging New Embedded System Standards for Electronic Warfare, Signals Intelligence, and Radar Applications. My name is John McHale, Group Editorial Director with Military Embedded Systems and moderator for today's event. Our speaker today is Roger Hosking, Vice President and Co-Founder of Pentek Incorporated. At Pentek, Roger is responsible for new product definition, technology development, and strategic alliances. With more than 30 years in the electronics industry, he has authored hundreds of articles about software radio and digital signal processing. Prior to his current position, he served as engineering manager at WaveTech Rockland and holds patents in frequency synthesis and spectrum analysis techniques. He holds a Bachelor of Science degree in physics from Allegheny College and a BSEE and MSEE degrees from Columbia University in New York. Our sponsor for today's event is Pentek. Now for some short housekeeping announcements. This and all Open Systems Media webcasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. Today's webcast will consume about 40 to 45 minutes, leaving the remaining time for the question and answer session. And I want to point out some important buttons on your screen. First, please take note of the Enlarge Slides button. By clicking on this button, you'll be able to view the slides in full screen mode. You can use the Download Slide button to view the slides as a PDF to see them larger. Next important button is the Forward to a Friend button, which enables you to email a friend to register for this event. Third button on your console window I want you to look at allows you to enter questions in real time. We'll do our best to address these questions during the closing Q&A session. If you have a question pertaining to the webcast operation itself, one of our technicians will respond back to you during the webcast. Please note, and as much as we'd like to, we may not get to all of your questions today. In that case, someone may get back to you after the webcast with more information. Today's webcast will be archived online and be available for 1 year. There will also be an MP3 version of the event available. And now I'm pleased to turn it over to Roger Hosking. Roger, take it away.
All right. Thanks so much, John, and thanks to everybody for joining us today. Today we're going to be talking about standards. We're going to be talking about standards that have been developed by customers in the military and aerospace primarily, and also by standards that have been evolving through industry and through standards organizations like VITA. So the topics that we'll be covering today include how these standards evolved and why they came about, and then how they can be applied to solving the problems for actual systems that go into our primarily our mil-aero defense marketplace. And then we'll wind up with some examples of products and some implementation strategies to show how these standards can then be propagated into real products for deployment. The Open Systems Group, which is a consortium of a lot of different organizations, has defined the Sensor Open System Architecture, or SOSA. And so different branches of the armed services have gotten together to develop and adopt these standards that address the needs for C4ISR applications, primarily, again, for mil-aero applications. And they really address a lot of common sensor-based systems, which include virtually all of those C4ISR applications that you can see here. The objective is for the affordability of platforms by using reconfigurable, reusable hardware and software so that they can be repurposed quickly for new threats and for new requirements. It also stresses the interaction between business and the acquisition practices to help get the products more effectively delivered to meet the requirements of these different organizations. One of the other standards that's evolved over the years has been from CERDEC, which is an Army standards organization, that are, again, definitely involved in trying to define new architectures for new systems that go into primarily vehicle electronics for the Army. So we're going to use this as an example of how these higher level standards can be then used by specific organizations like the Army to meet the requirements that they have. So in this case, the Victory architecture, which was defined a few years back, has the concept of being able to do what a lot of these standards require, is that the shareability of resources across different applications and to allow them to be reconfigured quickly to meet new needs. And the whole idea here is that by sharing those resources, what you're doing is you're using the space that's available, especially limited on vehicles, you're using the space more effectively by not having duplicate structures within the vehicle. For example, antennas, multiple antennas could sometimes be combined into a single antenna. A frequency standard, for example, could be a single frequency standard that then could be used across multiple systems within a vehicle, saving space, saving weight, swap functions. So that's really the driving factor for a lot of these initiatives. So one of the things that comes from the standards group, the VITA 49 is a VITA specifications group, has been the VRT. And in a very quick overview, the traditional method of building software radio structures has been what's called a stovepipe architecture, which is what you can see on the left-hand side of the screen. Notice particularly the number of red lines in that block diagram. Those are analog links. What that means is RF or IF signals that have to be distributed to different subsystems, and that takes cabling, it takes RF switches, and it's quite cumbersome, and often it gives you a very dedicated, locked-in network of cables and connectors and switches that are only suitable for doing one thing. And then each of those subsystems has its own digitizer set, which again is redundancy. So its complexity and its redundancy is what's traditionally been done for building applications that go into military craft. But what the VRT does is it says, let's digitize the signals as close as possible to the antenna and then distribute the digitized signals across a COTS network to the different applications, like a SIGINT application or a communications application. The whole idea here is that what you're doing is you're making the delivery of the signals to these different subsystems much more flexible and configurable because it's being routed through a COTS network. And this is the whole rationale for the VRT. But most importantly, the second most important fact is that it also defines an RF protocol standard for delivering digitized RF and IF signals from the digitizers down to these different applications so that each application has enough information in terms of metadata, how the data was collected, what frequency, what the tuning range, what the antenna azimuth. All of that information is clearly identified in the packets that go across this digital network so that those packets can, their context can be understood and used by each application appropriately according to its needs. So again, this is directly in line with the philosophy of these open standards that we were talking about just in the last few slides. So let's see, for example, how this concept gets put into practice by improving the Victory architecture, by improving it using the new MORA, or the Modular Open RF architecture, which is an upgrade to the Victory system. So first, what we're looking at here is the basic initial Victory architecture, where you see our three primary buses, if you want. One is the Victory data bus, which is gigabit Ethernet, that's used to transfer control status information among the different parts of the system. There's a, on the very top left there, there's a user interface, which is your shared processing unit, your human interface with displays and controls and so forth. VPX was chosen down at that lower left to be the architecture for the embedded system boards that include, for example, the software-defined radio boards to do the signal processing. And then the antennas deliver analog RF-IF signals across the RF cables through distribution unit to different boards within the chassis, the software-defined radio chassis. And this architecture uses the concepts of VITA 49, but the trouble is that, this is a relatively small bandwidth in terms of the data movement on the gigabit Ethernet. So what was done in the MORA initiative was a new 10 gigabit Ethernet interconnectivity network was implemented. This is a point-to-point network using one or more links at 10 gigabits Ethernet to dramatically improve the speed of moving digital data around between the elements of the system. So a gigabit Ethernet or 10 gigabit Ethernet switch was introduced, and now the data that flows between the cards and between the cards and the processing unit up front is done over this VITA 49 radio data link on the MORA high-speed 10 gigabit Ethernet bus. And this dramatically improved the data rate for sharing data across different boards and between the boards and the processing unit. So this then is the first incarnation of the MORA being imposed on the Victory architecture. But later on, the whole idea of trying to digitize the signals as close to the antenna as possible has also led to the need and the desire to do the A to D and D to A conversion as close to the antennas as possible. So now you can put a remote acquisition subsystem right up near the antenna where the data is then digitized close to the antenna. And how do you get the data from those front-end remote acquisition modules is by taking advantage of the MORA bus to transfer VITA 49 radio data to and from across the switch those data acquisition front-end modules for receive-transmit functions back into the software radio chassis, the VPX chassis. So this was a major step in terms of conceptualizing the VITA 49 mandate of getting rid of that stovepipe architecture and doing digitizing close to the antennas. But as you see, with this particular architecture, there's still room for some improvement. And so we could say later evolution. What will eventually happen is as more and more of those RFIF links are done by local remote data acquisition modules, the need for the RF distribution switch and for the RF cables that are connecting them goes away or is greatly reduced. So this is kind of the final ultimate utopia, if you want, of the architecture that's defined in the VITA 49, and then everything is digitized up front close to the antennas, and all signals are delivered across the system using the VITA 49 radio bus across high-speed links. So this is kind of the evolutionary step, and the nice thing is the Victory architecture can adjust and migrate through that chain as required for different applications without having to scrap the basic concept of Victory. It can just simply be enhanced and accommodate that new technology as time and technology moves on. So let's take a look at some of the requirements to implement this architecture, the MORA architecture, for board vendors like Pentek, for example. This is just a list of some of the things that are important to implement in the board-level products. Of course, we're talking about interchangeable components. We're talking about both 1 and 10 gigabit Ethernet, VITA 49 engines, reconfigurable functions using FPGA and also software. You need to have it scalable for channel count and also synchronous across multiple channels. And to try to get as much as possible when you're in a chassis to use backplane I.O. for your high-speed connections, which include both analog and digital signals. So this is kind of what the mission, if you want, requires in terms of the specific functions that are needed to make it all possible. So fortunately, the industry and the standards group, VITA notably, have come out with a lot of new technology that's highly usable. For example, Xilinx keeps coming out with more capable FPGAs with each new generation that they have. Here, the Kintex UltraScale has over 1 million logic cells and over 5,000 DSP engines, perfectly suitable for implementing these kinds of systems. TI, for example, has come out with a lot of A to D and D to A converters so that the wideband signals can be digitized close to the antenna and implement that Vita 49 digital RF-IF distribution. A lot of the interfaces between the A to Ds and the D to As have now migrated from parallel LVDS to a high-speed serial interface called JESD204B, which greatly reduces the number of lanes. The number of lanes and traces on the printed circuit board, and really allows those high-speed data converters to connect nicely with interfaces that are compatible inside the FPGA. There's other new technologies, for example. One is the Vita 57.4. This is the FMC Plus specification, which, in order to take advantage of these new high-speed serial interfaces we just talked about, upgrades the FMC specification with now many more lanes of serial I.O., either 24 or 8 additional serial lanes to support some of these JESD204B, and also to support higher data rates for the front-end modules that contain the A to Ds for the FMC family of products. Also, less than a year ago, Vita 49 Group delivered its Vita 49.2 radio transport specification, which upgrades the original 49 to now support both receive and transmit protocols, control and status, and also precision timing, which is very essential, of course, for synchronous operation across multiple channels and across multiple platforms. Very important. Other new standards that have evolved, again, from the Vita group, is the Vita 66 specification group, which is a family of specifications that takes care of high-speed optical backplane connections, which can then go between slots in a VPX backplane or between chassis or even across relatively long distances, because the fact that optical interfaces have a superior distance capability compared with copper. And this, again, is a blind mate connection between the VPX modules and the backplane. Likewise, the Vita 67 collection of specifications define analog RF connections to the backplane. Again, the connections are implemented as a two-part connection with connectors on the modules that engage in the VPX chassis and the connectors on the backplane. This allows you to insert and remove cards both for optical and for the RF signals without having to deal with front panel cabling, which is often a maintenance issue and a reliability issue. So these two new standards are very significant to help in these types of systems. And then also in 2017, the Vita 65.0, 65.1 specifications revision last year kind of split the spec into a more appropriate organization of the basic specs and then the individual sub-specifications that allow you to have specific profiles for each of the different major specs within the OpenVPX and VPX. Some of the new things are the radial backplane clock. This is really essential for synchronization, and a reference clock also, again, to make sure that synchronization is possible across it. It also enhances some of the different variations possible with the Vita 66 and Vita 67, the optical and the RF backplane connections, so that you can have a lot of different combinations of I.O. Based on certain standards that are now defined very well within the Vita specification for 65.0 and 65.1. Now, in order to take advantage of all of this new technology, Pentek has announced our model 5983, which is the an FMC plus carrier for 3U VPX. It uses the Kintec's ultrascale architecture and takes advantage of that FPGA for all of its very powerful resources. It features a Gen 3 by 8 PCI Express interface with 8 gigabytes per second peak rate. There's user gigabit serial I.O. to the backplane. It also includes a precision GPS receiver that accepts the signal from a GPS antenna and delivers a 10 megahertz reference clock and a PPS, pulse per second signal, to help with synchronization across multiple boards and platforms. It also includes 9 gigabytes of 2400 megahertz transfer rate DDR4 SDRAM, user I.O. for LVDS. It has the Vita66.4 optical backplane that gives you 12 gigabytes full duplex. This is that optical backplane I.O. we talked about before. It also features the new FMC Plus site, which is the Vita57.4 with the extra serial lines, and installs the Vita49 protocol engine inside the FPGA. A very capable product that embraces a lot of the technologies that we looked at before. So how does this then work in a system? Well, first of all, let's take a view of that block diagram and kind of shrink it down into a smaller diagram that represents everything that we just looked at in that larger block diagram, so it'll be easier for us to see how it fits together in a system. On top of that FMC module, on top of the FMC carrier, you need to install an FMC module. We've chosen this particular one, which has two very wideband A to Ds running at 3 gigasamples per second. It has two wideband D to A converters running at 2.8 gigasamples per second. It has a timing bus generator that accepts a 10 megahertz clocks from the GPS receiver that we looked at before, and does frequency synthesis for synthesizing the clocks required for the A to D and the D to A converter. And this module, this FMC module, then really gives you a complete two-channel wideband front end suitable, again, for digitizing those high-frequency signals up close to the antenna in that remote acquisition concept that we looked at before. If we redraw that diagram into a simpler one, as shown down here at the bottom middle, and then put next to it the FMC carrier, we can attach the FMC module to the FMC carrier and have a very powerful single board 3U VPX subsystem capable of being a citizen in this new architecture that we've been talking about. So let's see how this will work for a Mora system solution. So inside the 3U VPX chassis, let's put two of those modules we just looked at, the JadeFX carrier and FMC module, and we'll also put in a single board computer. The single board computer is there to act as a controller for the JadeFX modules, and also to provide interface to the Victory data bus using its 1 gigabit Ethernet interface. So we've got the Victory data bus handled. We also have two Vita66.4 links, which will support the 10 gigabit Ethernet that we have in the Mora upgrade for the high-speed bus in the Victory upgrade to Mora system. Of course, power bus is required, and then we also have the RF signals going through cables, in this case, in a 3U VPX chassis. So with these boards, we're implementing the concepts of and the requirements of the Mora system. Now, if you take a look at the next step, which would be to migrate some of the A to D and D to Wave functions up to a remote acquisition system that's close to the antenna, that's the next generation, if you want, of the concept which would implement that, the Vita 49 concept, to get rid of the stovepiping. And so here, let's see what's inside of these orange boxes that represent the remote data acquisition module electronics. Well, you can put one of the boards, one of our Jade FX boards, up there, but you also need a single board computer, and each of these two components then will give you the Victory data bus. It will give you the Mora bus. It will give you the power and the RF connections necessary. So this then represents a two-board solution to the problem. It gives you everything that you need for the up and down conversion, the Vita 49.2. Engine. The only trouble is that it's a little bulky because it does require two boards. So let's see how we can improve on that. If we take a look at the next version of what could be done, let's start with the same board that we had before, our 5983, which is what you're seeing below, but also let's upgrade it to our 5984, which includes an SOM, System on Module, ARM processor. This adds a complete ARM Cortex-9 system controller, and this then is a system which effectively replaces the need for the single board computer. That was a separate card that we required in the previous architecture. So now you've got the function of the single board computer all within the same 3U VPX FMC module. It does the reconfigurability of the FPGA. It controls and monitors, and it performs high-level processing tasks. And the only thing you really need then to make a complete subsystem for 3U VPX is to add the FMC module into the the Vita 57.4 slot, as shown here. So let's redraw that with the FMC module attached to look like this diagram that you see here at the bottom of the screen. Now, let's take a look at revisiting the remote acquisition module using the 5984 with the SOM. So here, what you see is the Jade FX 5984 with the ARM processor built in. And now, what you've got is you've got all the required interfaces for Victory and Mora. You've got the Victory data bus, you've got the 66.4 for the 10 gigabit Ethernet, power, and RF connections, which will be quite local in this case. So this single board could then act inside of a small enclosure up right next to the antenna to give you everything that you need to do the remote acquisition function according to the Mora architecture. The two links that would go up there would be the Victory bus. You can see that going up from the blue line. And, of course, the Vita 49 traffic is going across the Mora bus. So everything is controllable on the Victory bus. The high-speed data is going across the Vita 49 bus. And you've got a very relatively compact size, weight, power subsystem in a single board that can be used then as your front-end acquisition module. So let's again just revisit the list of requirements that we had for board vendors. What do they need? What's required? And if we take a look at the architecture we just gave you with the Jade FX board, the 5984, for example, it addresses all of the functions that we really need. It gives you the control, it gives you the high-speed gigabit Ethernet for the signals, synchronization, all of the different functions that are required. So it does allow you to have a product that's available now to implement a pretty much all of the more requirements that are available that have been spelled out in terms of its ultimate destination of trying to eliminate a lot of that that older architecture and do a lot of the sharing that was kind of mandated in the first specifications that we looked at. So in terms of the status of these products that we looked at, our model 5983, this is the FMC carrier with the Kintex Ultrascale with all of these open standards that you see listed here. That was released in January of this year. We've started shipping that already. And then the 5984, which is the product with the SoC, the system on processor, the ARM processor, and that gives you the full solution that we looked at in just the last slide. And of course, for more information, you can go to our website, which is shown here. Now, just kind of to wrap things up, what I wanted to do was to go to again, our SOSA architecture, just to kind of review what all of the different pieces of this, eco-structure, if you want, and how the standards are evolving and how they're going. First of all, each of these standards that we looked at, the Mora standard, the Victory standard, the SOSA standard, there's FACE, which is Future Airborne Standards, there's CMOS, which is another group of the standards organization. They all have a lot of things in common, and that is the reusability and the sharing of resources so that our government can take advantage of new technology and share those different resources across the platform without having to have duplication. This really saves in terms of time to market. It makes the business environment quite competitive and innovative, and that's another major initiative that all of these standards are driving at, trying to get the newer technology to be deployable in systems that will have long life cycles because of their modular nature, and to be able to include new capabilities and functions without having to scrap the entire system. So again, this is really the initiatives that we're seeing. We're very pleased to be part of the standards organizations that contribute to these. And I guess we would encourage all of our customers to pay attention to these new standards that are coming out, because it will definitely be in the best interest of you to be on top of those new standards to take advantage of them in your next major program. So right now, I'm going to turn it back over to John.
Thank you, Roger. As always, an excellent presentation. And now we're going to get to the questions from the audience. So you've got Roger here for another 20, 25 minutes, so ask him anything you like. And I will start off with the first question. Does Pentek sell systems or just boards?
We sell systems in that we sell recording systems. And those recording systems include our software radio boards for acquiring the signals. But we also sell development systems where you can get board-level products installed in the chassis of your choice in nature, conduction-cooled VPX, PCs, with all of our software installed so that you can get started. And a lot of our customers who are, for example, first-time VPX users will often find it very advantageous to get a VPX system fully configured, fully cabled, with all of the right slots in the backplane, connections all set up and ready to go, ready for development. So we call that our Spark development system offering, and it's quite popular.
Okay. Next question. Are the customers specifically asking for products that comply to certain standards, or is it something else?
Yes. We have customers now and for some time who've been asking us for compliance with, for example, Vita 49, for compliance with the Mora and Victory. These are coming at a higher, you know, higher percentage than before, and part of it is that some of the acquisition that's taking place now has reference to some of these standards as being requirements for the acquisition. So we expect to see more and more of that, and as of course more of those requirements are part of a deliverable, you're going to see that increase the industry's paying attention to adoption of these new standards.
Are the adoption of the standards, a question here from the audience, if you could compare, how does it compare when you're dealing with upgrades versus new designs on platforms when it comes to enabling open architectures and standards such as what Mora and SOSA are requiring? Is it different? Is a little more technical, a little more swap challenges with upgrades versus new designs on platforms?
The by using, for example, VPX and the open VPX specifications, you know, they're constantly evolving. So what happens in probably the worst case is you might require a new backplane if the backplane that you have doesn't support, for example, some of the new optical or analog RF IO signals. But we find out that a major portion of a VPX system has to do with its the software that goes into it, the applications that are developed upon it. And by going to a new backplane, you can often preserve all of the connections that were part of the old architecture and simply add the new connector locations with the appropriate optical or RF connectors installed without necessarily disturbing the overall software architecture. And by doing so, switch from front panel I.O. to backplane I.O. With very little impact on the rest of the system. So that kind of a change is more of a mechanical change than redesigning of the system. And any system that's based on standards like VPX, it's going to be easier to upgrade than a proprietary architecture system that might have to be redesigned from scratch.
And that was the whole purpose behind OpenVPX, was it not?
Exactly. OpenVPX defined profiles that are recommended ways of using the Vita 46 VPX basic definition so that vendors could comply with certain profiles, and therefore vendors complying with the same profile would be highly interoperable as compared with what was available before Vita 65. And Vita 65 has been around for some many years now, and the latest revision has the Vita 65.0 and .1 are now organized in a way that makes the profiles even more easy to understand and easy to comply with.
Okay, question here from the audience on Mora. How is Mora bus scalable when 10 gigabit Ethernet is not sufficient?
The nice thing about it is 10 gigabit Ethernet, 40 gigabit Ethernet, for example, look effectively the same from a software standpoint. It's simply a higher bandwidth, even going to 100 gigabit Ethernet. So that first step of going to 10 gigabit Ethernet is a nice, you know, leap from the 1 gigabit Ethernet previously. But in fact, again, software and applications that are written that start running out of bandwidth can simply insert 40 gigabit Ethernet or 100, and those bottlenecks that were previously arrived at can be blown away without any major software architectural changes.
Okay. Next question. Are you shipping products with Vita 49.2 support?
We have an initial product right now that has both receive and transmit. What we're doing at this point is just getting into Ethernet, standard Ethernet engines inside of our XMC modules and on our Jade FX modules. Those will be UDP to start with, and then those will then have a Vita 49 engine. So we've delivered a first Vita 49 product back about 4 years ago just to customers, but it was 49.0, not the 49.2. So we've been doing this. We've been very involved in the specification. Our VP of Engineering has been an active member of the Vita 49 committee at the working group at Vita. So we are kind of following what our requirements are from customers and definitely working actively on the 10 gigabit Ethernet Vita 49 engines that will go into the products like the Jade FX products that we looked at today. John?
I'm sorry, I had the mute button on. I apologize.
Okay.
Another Mora question here. Are Mora SOSA requirements being implemented yet on programs? If not, how far out are they? I think SOSA is a little farther behind than Mora.
Yes.
Can you speak to that?
Yeah, Mora is actually it probably in the evaluation stage right now in terms of doing field trials and qualification tests. So the in terms of its being flowed down from a government requirement right now, I think that's probably off a little bit in the future, but not much, because again, CERDEC is extremely active in promoting this the Mora standard, and they're looking for vendors and they're looking for capability demonstrations that will prove validate the concept. So that has a very high profile and a very high priority for CERDEC.
Okay. Next question from the audience. If you have room for sufficient processing at the antenna, why not do the processing there?
The processing at the antenna is often more complex than you can reasonably put inside of a single FPGA that could be at the antenna. Primarily, what we find is, for example, doing a radar processing application. Often the signal processing, digital signal processing, is defined in two pieces. One is digitizing the signal and extracting the RF digital signal that is delivered as an IF Vita 49 to a large processing engine, which is typically down in a VPX card cage, that might do STAP or SAR processing algorithms, which would be beyond the capabilities of a single FPGA that might be located remotely at the antenna head. The second answer to the question is, it's very likely that the more downstream processing is likely to be evolving and changing as new requirements come in. And to have to redesign the front end at the antenna head is probably not as attractive. Rather, leave that as digitizing for initial RF down conversion, for example, from, let's say, a 20 gigahertz antenna frequency signal through an analog RF stage into a digitizer, into digital IF that goes out over Vita 49. That's the kind of thing that's likely to be portable across a lot of different applications at the back-end processing stage, and also across different approaches or techniques of the processing that'll take place to, for example, exploit new threats or to implement new countermeasures that our military might need to have.
Okay. Next question from the audience. Do I need to get the FMC and the FMC carrier from the same vendor?
You can, and you're definitely encouraged to do so, and the reason is very well known. And the reason is that an FMC solution requires a front end and a carrier, and the front end and the carrier have to have a compatible IP image in the FPGA to address the needs of the front end. So if you're getting the front end from one vendor and the carrier from another, someone has to put in the IP that's going to tailor its operation to take best advantage of that particular front end. If you're getting both the carrier and the FMC module from one vendor, that should already be done and available from the vendor. So you have software that's ready to use. You have FPGA development tools that are ready to use. And this is what we do in our Flexor set, which combines both the carrier and the FMC module as a single complete product, fully supported with development tools.
Okay. Next question from the audience. How is artificial intelligence, AI, being leveraged in radar and EW applications? And how is embedded computing technology and some of these requirements, how is that going to enable more AI where decision-making is kind of handled by the system itself, taking pressure off the commanders in the field?
Right. In terms of AI, I guess one of the things that's specific to the software radio domain is cognitive radio. And what cognitive radio is, means different things to different people. But, for example, it might mean trying to identify the environment that you are in at a particular moment. And that could be an environment that has a lot of different spectral action going on, so that your transmission, let's say in a communication system that can't get through on one frequency, might need to adapt to a different frequency, and it might need to do so because someone's trying to jam you or there's just simply a strong interferer present. So the intelligence, if you want, of a cognitive radio is partially to ensure the reliability of a particular function like a communications channel in a changing unknown scenario that might occur during a mission. The other thing is to identify and classify signals. And again, once you've got a very powerful processor, the classification and identification of signals like friend or foe can be done also with advanced signal processing techniques that are extremely well suited for either FPGA or digital signal processing engines downstream, if you want, in the VPX chassis. So artificial intelligence means a lot of different things, but in terms of software radio, it's primarily in identifying the signals so that they can be delivered with some actionable intelligence attached to them so that the operator doesn't have to try to figure out what the signal is or what it means, and he's given a heads up on what it is by in automatic signal processing technology terms.
Thank you, Roger. Next question from the audience. How do you develop custom FPGA IP for your products?
We have a Navigator design suite, which includes the Navigator FPGA design kit. This includes a complete project in the Xilinx Vivado tool suite that is based on AXIE4 compliant IP structures. We provide the complete project folder that contains all IP at source level and also packaged as AXIE4 compliant modules. AXIE4 is a standard that has been developed and it's used widely throughout the industry in terms of FPGA development to connect modules, different function modules together, inputs and outputs, without having to design and define custom gaskets between the modules. It's a very elegant solution. It allows you to speed up your development dramatically. And then also, secondly, we use the IP integrator tool from Xilinx to allow a graphical representation of these AXE4 blocks to allow you to see on a workspace the flow of signals from one block to another, and to be able to connect them with a click of a mouse, input to output, and build your IP structure up using some very user-friendly, graphically oriented tools provided by that IP integrator.
Okay. Next question from the audience. I've heard how hard it is to use the JESD204B products. What about yours?
Our JESD204B products, the mission is for us to abstract away those low-level details because it is a very complex interface. So what we provide is we provide products using JESD devices that have high-level libraries that allow you to set all the programmable functions, sampling rates and different modes and decimations and up and down conversion, to set all of their operating modes from high-level libraries without the customer having to worry about the low-level complexity at the JESD interface level, which is a very high-speed, multi-lane, gigabit serial link. So we take that pain away from our customers through our software tools and through the structures that we implement in the FPGA to then respond to the correct controls and parameters delivered so that those structures in the FPGA handle the necessary connections that are needed.
Thanks, Roger. And we have about 5 to 7 minutes left with Roger, so if you have any more questions you want to get in, shoot them over to me. Next question from the audience. Where does HOST, Hardware Open Systems Technology Initiative, fall into the open architecture efforts such as SOSA and MORA? Do they overlap? I thought SOSA was taking HOST under its wing. Is that correct?
Yeah, it does. And again, there are different organizations. You have the Air Force, you have the Navy, you have the Army, you have the Marines. Each of them has a different way of saying largely the same thing. And the HOST, the FACE, the CMOS, all of these structures have slightly different flavors that are influenced by the specific needs, directives, and missions of each of the branches of the military, but they all share a common theme of reusability, sharing across, sharing resources across multiple applications, lowering the acquisition cost for systems, allowing new technology to be inserted very easily, and to shorten the time for getting new technology into the field. So those are common to all of them, and there are many initiatives.
Thank you. Next question from the audience. What software development tools do you need for your JADE-FX boards?
Well, that now is a more complicated development environment. Why? Because you now have an ARM processor, and for that we have a Linux-based development suite that allows you to develop code for the ARM processor as your system controller. We also have our ReadyFlow board support, our Navigator board support package that allows you to write C code that the SOM, the ARM processor, uses to control the registers and the functions of our FMC, XMC, FPGA-based products to make them do the things that are required by the application. And then thirdly, we have the Navigator FPGA Design Kit to allow you to go in and reconfigure different portions of the FPGA for certain functions. So with the JADE-FX family, there's really three pieces again. There's the development environment for the SOM, ARM processor system, the FPGA board support package for those functions, and then the FPGA design kit.
Thank you, Roger. We talked a little bit about COTS today and open architectures. The electronic warfare community was not always known for open systems and such, but seems to be embracing technology and open standards more than in the past. How is that speeding up? Why is that? What are you seeing there?
Yeah, would definitely. I think part of it is just two things. You know, government mandates for using COTS rather than proprietary systems. But I think from a practical standpoint, both customers, our government customers, and the vendors see the benefits of using open architecture for them to be able to get their products done and supported more efficiently, at lower cost, more competitively. So if you're a proprietary house and you want to do everything from the ground up, you're going to have to compete with another house that's doing things based on COTS. And the advantages will pretty much define what the customer perceives as which is the better value. And it's becoming clearer and clearer that an open standard COTS-based solution has so many more advantages over a proprietary solution that it usually wins just on the face of it.
Okay. Next question from the audience. Can you comment on your JESD 204C roadmap FMC-based products?
We have not yet used the RevC. We're definitely getting there. One of the things that we're finding it's very difficult is to achieve the full levels of synchronization down to the high-speed sample clock across multiple systems. And what we're looking for in the C revision is to improve the synchronizability, if that's a word, of these chips across not only across multiple chips but across multiple boards and then across multiple systems.
Okay. I want to follow up on not the answer to this question. A couple questions ago, you mentioned the ARM processor. Are you getting more demand for ARM processors in military applications? Where would you be likely to see that the most?
Yeah, I don't think there's any one military discipline or branch of the service that is asking more for it. I think, first of all, you're seeing requirement. You're seeing a lot of customers interested in Linux as the operating system, as opposed to, let's say, Windows or another operating system, because many customers, and often the military customers especially, want to be able to have full level visibility to the all of the code right down to the very bottom, and that's one of the things Linux offers. It allows you to go down to the very lowest levels and to tailor the operating system specifically for the needs that you have without having to take a lot of baggage and overhead that another operating system that's less open might impose. And of course, the vulnerability of Linux to viruses and other cyber attacks it's very, very good, very resistant as compared to some other operating systems that could be contenders. So it's security, it's visibility, and it's ultimately the full control that customers prefer with that Linux environment. And the ARM processor is an extremely good and capable offering with a lot of different levels of horsepower available as well.
Thanks, Roger. And as we're wrapping up, anywhere our audience can see you and Pentek products coming up, any events coming up you want to mention?
Yeah, I'm going to be next week in Oklahoma City at the IEEE RadarCon show, and I'd be willing to and look forward to talk with anyone who's willing to come by our booth.
Well, thank you, and that brings us right up to our time limit for today. Sorry we cannot get to all of your questions. Someone may get back to you after the webcast with more information. I'd like to thank Roger for speaking today and Pentek for sponsoring the event. Please remember that this and all Open Systems Media webcasts are copyrighted and may not be recorded or used in any way without the express written consent of Open Systems Media. This webcast will be archived online today and be available for 1 year. There will also be an MP3 version of the event available. Thank you all for attending, and I look forward to seeing you on future Open Systems Media webcasts. Goodbye.